And now we're going to move into a new module, learning about CSS. So just a little bit of background here. CSS stands for Cascading Style Sheets. And the whole purpose of CSS is to describe the presentation of our HTML. It really describes the presentation of any markup language, XML, XHTML, HTML, any of those, SVG included. But in our case, we're mostly concerned with HTML and some SVG. Now, when we're talking about CSS, we're going to be hitting these points. We're going to talk about the selectors that you use to choose what it is that you're going to affect, and the combinators. I'll get to that in just a second. And then we're going to look at a bunch of properties. The nice thing about learning about CSS is that it's pretty flat in concept. There's not a lot of code structure, hierarchy, or strategy that you need to worry about. It's a really flat language that's just a series of selectors and then a style definition, and we call it a style rule. And there's little more than just a collection of style rules. What it is that you want to affect, and then how you want to affect it. Think about a word processor. You've written a letter to your grandma, and you've got the letter all well composed and edited and everything, but you want to bold some things and indent some things. You want to affect some changes to your letter. The first thing that you do is you go and highlight the area of the letter that you want to affect the change, and then you go hit the bold button or the indent button once you've affected a selection. And it's just the same with CSS3. We want to select some area of our DOM, our document object model, our HTML, and then we want to apply some properties to that selected area. So it's just a collection of selectors and then properties with their values, just a lot of that over and over. So we're going to look at selectors first. Selectors are a way to determine what about your HTML is going to be affected, and there's a lot of different ways to do that. In a word processor, of course, you just highlight it and you affect whatever it is that you've highlighted. I'm going to jump over to CodeShow, and I'm going to open the selectors example, the selectors demo. And when I open that, what we have here is just a simple CSS pane with an HTML pane below it, and then the results, the rendered results, in the pane on the right. Okay? So as I enter CSS into this pane, I'm going to see the results of it affect this page. So the first selector that I want to show you is the type selector. Now, the type selector refers to the type of HTML tag. So you can see in this example HTML that I have on the left that we've got a number of divs and paragraph tags and UL tags and table tags, lots of different tags in there. And their type is determined by the name of that element, the name of that tag. So if I want to, for instance, change everything in a tag with a type of table, I just type table for that selector. And to see some change there, I'll have to define some CSS property and value. So let's just say color red. We haven't looked at the properties yet, but we'll just say color red, and that'll change all of the text red. Now, notice that the values on the right in the render pane that are red are not just the things directly inside of the table, but it's been passed down. It's been passed down to all of the children of that table. So the 2012 value that's inside of the TD, that's inside of the TR, that's inside of the table, got that red value because it cascaded down to it. Okay? So that's the table. Let's look at a UL. That stands for an unordered list, and I can affect red text in the unordered list in all of its list items by just referring to UL. I could also say LI, and that would do the same thing because it's setting all of the list items to a color of red. So that's how I do the type. The next style selector that I want to show you is class. Now you'll notice in our HTML that we have a couple of divs down here that have been decorated with an attribute of class. And in this case, it just says fancy. Let's go ahead and add two classes for each of those. Let's say that it's going to be fancy and bold. I want you to know that we can have multiple values inside of a class tag, and both of those classes are going to apply to that element. So for all of the elements that have a class of fancy, I use the fancy selector with a period in front of it to apply that, and now you can see in our render results that both of those divs have taken that style property. They've both gotten the color of red. Let's add another one, and let's say I want to use bold. I'm going to use bold. Now, both the red and the bold are applying to those two divs because I've applied two different style rules, both using the class selector. Now, the interesting thing about the class selector is it begins with that period, but there's an assumption that's being made here. There's a default, and it looks like this. That star is going to result in the exact same thing, and it's actually going to behave this way whether you explicitly put that star there or not. The star is called the universal type selector, and it essentially means all of the types that have a class of fancy, or all of the types that have a class of bold. Okay? So when you are writing class selectors and other types of selectors, and you know that it doesn't proceed with anything like this, just know that that type selector is actually there. That's the way it's going to behave. Michael, do you ever actually use the type selector on its own?
Just the asterisk?
Yeah.
No, but I have used, and another example similar to that is that you might want to put the word div or li dot if you just want to have it applied to that class for just that kind of element.
Yeah, absolutely. What Michael's referring to is the fact that before this dot, I can put any type. The universal type selector is the default, but I can put any other type, and so I'm combining the selector here with the class and the type selectors. All right? So that's how you refer to elements in your DOM by way of their type and by way of their class. So let's look at another method. Let's look at referring by ID. Now, the difference between decorating your elements with classes and decorating with IDs is that classes don't need to be unique. It's essentially defining an adjective of your elements. These are the elements that are should be bolded or should be fancy, or they're things that describe your elements. But an ID is the identity of your element, and there should only be, it's like Highlander, there should only be one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's look at our HTML that we have as an example here and see where we have IDs. We've got an ID of div1 up there, and we also have an ID of lorem down here. Now, if I referred to div, it would affect both of those and more, but I'm going to refer to it by ID by using a hash sign and then lorem. And that didn't affect, because I need to start it. I had it started with a space. So I have a hash sign and then the ID, which is lorem, and I'm affecting that with the color of red, and you can see that that took effect in the render panel here. Pretty interesting.
Cool.
Now, so far, we haven't run into any conflicts that expanded beyond the render panel, but watch what happens if I just specify a type of div. Did you notice that pretty much everything on my screen changed to red?
Yes.
Yeah. That's because of a scoping issue. It really has applied that style rule to all the divs on the page. It doesn't know that I want to talk about just this pane over here. So we're going to get to that in just a little bit. But first I want to show you the attribute selector. So you've seen the type selector, you've seen the class selector, and you've seen the ID selector. But now we're going to look at the attribute selector. Attribute selectors have square braces around them. And the first thing you can do with an attribute selector, is you can just specify the attribute name. So let's go ahead and decorate this table with an attribute. Now, I could choose from some valid attribute of a table, but I can also make up an attribute as long as I precede it with data dash. Anything that's preceded with data dash, so we could make up one like owner. Who owns this table? Well, let's say author. Who authored this table? So we have data dash author. Now this is considered a valid HTML5 attribute because it begins with data dash. You can put anything you want in there. And sometimes that's helpful. So let's call this author P. Smith. That's who authored this table. Okay? That's perfectly valid. Now in our CSS, the first thing I can do is I can say for any, remember there's an assumption at the beginning here, for any element that has an attribute called data author, I want it to be colored red. And you can see that that change has taken effect in our output panel.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm not specifying that the data author value has some certain value. I'm just specifying that it actually has a data author element there, that it exists. Remember the required tag? The required tag didn't have to have any value in it whatsoever. So if you wanted to style, for instance, change from red to orange or something, everything, we don't need that universal type selector, everything that was required, you could do it that way.
Sure.
There's nothing required on my page, but you could use that.
Cool.
Now, you can get a little bit fancier in here, too. You can say data author not only exists, but it also exactly equals P. Smith. So now, whoever authored, whatever tables are authored by P. Smith will be highlighted in red. And you could, for instance, have a different author on a different table and highlight that in a different color. Now, notice the table doesn't work if I don't explicitly say P. Smith and get it exactly right.
Right.
But if I say, you know, anything, any table that was authored by Smith, I could use the string, the cash sign and an equal sign to mean it's terminated by or ends with. This is the equivalent of ends with. So any table, actually in this case any element, sure, that has a data author attribute that ends with Smith is going to be colored red now.
That's powerful stuff.
It is. It's good stuff. You could also do a begins with using the caret, and now notice that it doesn't match right now because there are no tables with a data author that begins with Smith, but there is a table that begins with P. Now sometimes you'll see quotes around the value in here. You do have to be careful that if you have this in a style tag, for instance, and it begins with double quotes, that you use the opposite quote sign, and you only need quotes if you don't have any spaces. If I had P space Smith, then I would need quotes around it, but if it's just a single value, then it's fine to do that without the quotes.
Cool.
Now you can also say that it matches any part of it with an asterisk equals. So now anything that contains P. Smith, which P. Smith does, or anything that just contains Smith, or anything that just contains P. So those all match, you can tell because my table is still red, but E, nope, that doesn't match. It's nowhere in the author's name. All right?
Yep.
So that is the attribute selector. Now, the last selector concept that I want to show you before we get into combinators, which is also a selector concept, is selector chaining. So far, you've seen me apply one selector and the style rule that applies to it. But what I want to do now is I want to apply the color red not only to my table, but I also want to apply it to my lists. So I want to use a comma UL. That means that I want the text to be read for all of my elements that either match the first selector or match the second selector. And you can make that pretty big if you want. If, for instance, you want to do something to all of your headers, you could use H1, H2, H3, H4, and it would apply to all of those different headers. Now, you do have to be careful when we get into combinators to know that it resets the chaining of the selector string every time you hit a comma. So if, for instance, you were combining a couple of selectors, this prefix does not apply here. This is not the same as applying div to both of those. This is truly just selecting the UL.
So what would it mean, though, if you had div space table? What would that mean?
I'm glad you asked, because that's what we're going to talk about next. So you've been introduced to these selectors. Oh, and I missed one. I need to show you another one. This
Please.
Is great. But then we're going to get into combinators, and that's going to answer your question. So let's select the paragraphs on this page.
Sure.
You can see that we've got two of them. It highlighted lorem ipsum at the beginning. That's just like a short paragraph. And then it highlighted this longer paragraph. Now, what if I wanted to highlight just the first letter of that paragraph? You can do that with what's called a pseudo element. There are also pseudo classes, and I'll explain the difference. A pseudo element has two colons, and then the most common pseudo elements are first letter and first line. Now notice that the L in the lorem ipsum paragraph is red. So it's actually, even though there's not markup differentiating that first letter of my paragraph, it's been able to bring to the front this pseudo element. It's been able to apply a style just to that first letter. There's also first line, and this one's really cool because if you can see that it already has applied that to the first line. But what if I'm not doing color red? What if I'm, well, in addition to color red, I'm also doing the font size? Let's up that font size to say 24 points. Let's try it this way. Oh, it's not liking that. That's right. The way it actually works is even if you're upping the font size and so not as much text fits on that line, it's still going to recognize what is the first line. So that's pretty amazing thinking about the algorithm behind that implementation. Now, there are a number of pseudo classes, and pseudo classes are like virtual adjectives. So Whereas first line and first letter are like virtual elements, you could use hover as a virtual, as a pseudo class, to indicate the state where the element that's targeted by this selector rule is being hovered over. So now nothing is red, but if I hover over this paragraph, it turns red. I can hover over the other elements here and they don't, unless it's a paragraph. So the first one turns red and the last one turns red. Now how would I make it so that anything I hover over turns red?
I would think you'd just get rid of that paragraph.
Absolutely. I could either get rid of it or I could put a star in front of it. Now everything on the page has that hover selector. So notice even the biggest wrapper gets it. So my whole thing is I'm still running into this scoping problem. My CSS is applying to too much, which brings me to the topic of combinators. Now combinators are ways of combining simple selectors in your CSS so that they apply to really targeted sections. So for instance, right now I'm applying to all elements that are of the hover class, all elements that are being hovered over, and it's affecting everything. It's not what I want. Now I've rendered in this selectors example this pound render behind here so that you can see that that's the ID of that render screen. So let me just prefix this with render and then a space. Let me try that again. Render. Actually, let me use the div 1 that I have. So there's color red. So now I'm affecting everything inside of div 1. But if I want to affect only the divs that are inside of div 1, then I combine it like this. Now there's actually a character there. It looks invisible, but there is a character there. It's a space. The space is a first class citizen in CSS combinators. It means the descendant. So div is a descendant of an element with an ID of div 1. Let's look for those. Here's one. This div is a descendant, actually it's a direct descendant, of this div that has an ID of div 1. Now let's look for paragraphs that are the descendant of div 1. So let's change that to a P. Notice that there's a difference between this paragraph and this one. See, this one is buried. It's a second level descendant. It's a grandchild of the element with an ID of div 1. And yet, the color red is still applying to that one. So when you use the space, that means any descendant, however deep in that structure. So it's a really great way of scoping, because if I know that my page has a certain class on it, then I can refer to that class in my CSS selector chain, and then a space, and then I know that all of the paragraph, all of the tags in there, all of the selectors are going to apply only within that page. So it's a great way of scoping. Now the next combinator that I want to show you is similar to the descendant, but more specific. It looks like a greater than sign, an angle brace. Now the greater than sign says it needs to be a direct descendant. It has to be a child. It can't be a distant descendant, like a grandchild or a great grandchild. So let's go back to our div 1 and then div, this time using the child combinator. Now you can see that I want that paragraph tag, because we have an example of a paragraph tag that is a direct child, and we have a paragraph tag that is buried inside of another element. And this paragraph is not getting that style applied. It's too deep. It's a descendant, but it's not a child.
So when you're saying direct, what you're saying is it's an immediate child of that element. It's nothing that would be navigated through the hierarchy all the way down. So direct really means immediate child.
Absolutely. Okay. Sometimes you have to be really careful and make sure that you're using an angle brace, because if you use a space when you meant to use an angle brace, and you're containing something like a div or a table, and later on it's going to itself have divs or tables inside of it, right, you have to know that you're going to be affecting those if you use a space, but you won't be affecting them if you use an angle brace. So very important differentiation there.
Good.
Now there are two more combinators. They are the general sibling, that's the tilde, or the squiggly as we like to affectionately call it. The squiggly means that there is a sibling relationship between these two entities, and it is sequential, but it doesn't have to be an immediate sibling. It doesn't have to be the next or previous sibling. Okay? Let's look, for instance, at UL and div. So if I say I have something that is a UL that is succeeded as a sibling, on a sibling relationship, by a div. I want to apply the color red to it. You'll notice that all three of these divs got that because they are in fact related to a UL that precedes them. The order is important. There is a UL that precedes them at some point, and so this style is going to affect this last element in my selector chain.
So if there was a div sibling before the UL,
let's give that a shot.
Sure.
In this selectors example, we can actually type some HTML. So let's put a div here and just say hi. And there's hi, and it has not been affected because the order matters.
Okay.
Now, what if I want it to be, just like we had descendant and then child, what if I want it to be not just a sibling, but I want it to be the immediate sibling or the adjacent sibling? Then, instead of a tilde, I use a plus. That means that it has to be directly next to it. So you'll notice that our divs here no longer get that style because they are not immediately succeeding a UL.
Right.
Now, if I applied it to a table, there is a table that immediately succeeds a UL as a sibling.
So must follow it and be directly adjacent to it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. You can use this as a trick to when you're looking at a list and you want to, for instance, let's look at all of the LIs that are immediately succeeded. Oops. Let's look at all of the LIs that are immediately succeeded by another LI. You'll notice that only the first LI did not get that. So if you want to apply something to all elements in a list except for the first one, that's one way you could do it.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. Now, there are some pseudo classes that I neglected to mention, so I want to back up here and I want to introduce those. Now that we have some concept of chaining, I want to tell you about some of these pseudo classes that would make it easier to do what I just showed you.
Okay.
One of those pseudo classes is first child. So let's look at all LIs that are the first child.
And what's at the end of that line?
That's a mistake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and actually that's not applying yet because of a space at the beginning. That gets me every time. So I'm looking for the LI in a list that is the first child, and it only found one LI that is a first child. Now, there isn't an equivalent second child, third child, fourth child, but there is an nth child, and that looks like this. Nth child, now you have to specify somehow which child you're looking for.
Yeah.
And some of our selectors actually act like functions. Wow. And we can throw something in there into the parentheses. So in this case, I can say 1 to get the first one, 2 to get the second one, or 3 to get the third one.
So not a zero-based array.
No, not a zero-based array. Nope. It's actually following a pattern, an plus b. What it does is it takes the series of integers and plugs them in for n and does the math. And you can put in a pattern here. So you could, for instance, do something like 2n plus 3. And it's actually going to plug 0 in for n, multiply that by 2, and get 0, add 3, and determine that 3, or anything greater, is going to be applied. So you get an opportunity to kind of specify a formula there and have that take effect.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, the child one affects all children of this LI. Not all children of the LI, but all LIs, which are the nth child. But if you want to make sure that it is of this type, then instead of nth child, you use nth of type. But these pseudo classes come in extremely handy. So go research all of the pseudo classes and make sure you know what they are, because otherwise you might try to use some JavaScript or use some other methods that just make it far more difficult. If you can find the right pseudo class, it just makes your code really elegant.
That's awesome.
Remember that as we're talking about this, you can drop into the Q&A session online and ask some questions, and we've got some people dedicated to answering those. So if you have questions about the pseudo classes that I've showed, any of the selectors or combinators that I've shown, or if you want to ask about some that I haven't shown, feel free to do that.